Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Sephaku Holdings interim results presentation. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions at the end of today's presentation. If you should need assistance during the conference, please signal an operator pressing star and then zero. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I'd like to hand the conference over to Sikeni Ndlovu. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Jill. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to extend a very warm welcome to you all joining us for our 2018 interim financial results presentation for the period ended 30 September 2017. As Ibis has already told you, I'm Sikeni Ndlovu, Investor Relations Officer for Sephaku Holdings. To take us through the presentation this morning, we have Dr. Lebo Mokgosi, the Chief Executive Officer, and Neil Crawford-Lovett, the Financial Director. Soon after this, we'll move on to question and answers, during which Peter, the Sephaku Finance CEO, and Eden, the Investec MD, will join Doc, Dr. Lebo and Neil to respond to questions. And I'll be back to hand over now to Dr. Lebo.
Thank you very much, and good morning. Let's move straight to the first slide, which speaks to the same point of this period we're reporting on. This is slide number 4 on the presentation. As we've already mentioned in earlier presentations, this has been a very challenging trading time. The environment was actually quite challenging. But just for the group, to look at the average in the group, we've shown that the net profit for the group decreased slightly from 25.3 million to 14.8 million. With the basic earnings per share also decreasing from 12.5 cents to 7.3 cents. However, the net asset value per share increased slightly from 4.53 cents to 48.5 cents. If we look at the two operations individually, the wholly owned subsidiary of this Metia, its revenue remained flat at 447.8 million, and this is due to pressure on volume, as we will explain in the later slide. The increased price per unit of concrete year on year actually increased by about 1.9%, and the net profit decreased slightly from 37.6 million to 31.7. The tariff fund, which we've already announced earlier, marginally increased our overhead costs, but it has also provided access to new markets in the housing group, and the housing, and they also provide us with a growth opportunity in those markets. Cement, which is the part of cement, or Dangote Cement, South Africa, its revenue has decreased by 3.6 from 1.145 billion to 1.1104, and the sales volumes have decreased also by about averagely 4.9%, average 5% that we speak about in our presentation. The average price increase year on year, the same period last year compared to the period, they say 1.4%. However, we have seen quite an interesting, impressive Q3 performance. The volumes have increased almost by 10% year on year, and the revenue also increased by 14.2% to 666.6 million rand. Moving on to the next slide, which is slide number 5 on your presentation. We're looking at the national cement demand overview. Interestingly, if you look at the green and the brown bars, you will notice the movement, which is a slight decrease between 2016 and 2017, which even according to the econometrics that we nominate as the guide, the demand has since decreased by that much for the 6 month period. Our own decrease actually is in line with that predicted demand. If you look at the year-on-year quarterly cement demand growth, year-on-year from 2016, we see that the Q1 demand growth was at 3.1%, Q2 was at 4.4%, and there was a slight decline in Q3 of 2.9%. And as we've already said earlier in our first slide, that our own sales volume decreased by 4.9%. The total demand for forecast for 2017 sit at 12.7 million tons, not when, in case one of your presentations says that it is actually tons. And if you look at the green bar again and the brown bar, you see that there's a positive upswing expected from 2019 upwards to an average of about 2%. Moving on to the next slide, which speaks about cement average pricing profile per ton. If you look at the green bar, it shows the pain we've been through in the past reporting period with the downward pricing pressure. And if you look at the orange bar, that's the current one from early this year to now, shows the upward trend, especially with the price increments that we put in. Cement has actually achieved an effective 5% increase to date from January to now. The 2-3% price increment that we placed in August has actually been sustained in most markets, which is quite nice. And there's a visible improved trend in pricing as compared to the year before. The average price increase of 3% by end of September indexed to January 2016, and you can see that it comes from a very low base, which is why it looks like a minimum increment, but it's actually quite a good one. Moving on to the next slide, which speaks about imports. It is noticeable that on year-on-year, on the bottom, there's a decline of about 25% in the cement imports, both Pakistani and Chinese. By the end of September, we've seen those decreases. Imported cement from China as well, which has been a bit active in the market compared to Pakistan, has come down 12% to 330,000 tons. And the import through Durban, which is a market that we are impacted by, has also decreased by about 24%. So there's an average decrease in imports that we see them coming into Florida borders. Our exports have also decreased by about 18%. This is basically to the local countries like Botswana, Lesotho, and Swaziland. That's also come down in the 9 months period ending in September 2017. I will then up. Moving on to the next slide, slide number 8. Just briefly on meshing again, let me concrete. We have already reported that there was an intense price competition for the contract. There's been very limited capacity to increase price because of that. Everyone's fighting for the same little tie. The 12th plant is already operating fully in the south of Gauteng, and it's very well in the northern Gauteng. And the whole geographical diversification has actually insulated us against the pain of downward pressure on pricing. Moving on to the next slide, I'm going to ask Neil Capitalatros to take over and just take you through the financial performance for the period under review. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Milal. Starting out of slide number 10, looking at the group condensed consolidated comprehensive income. As Milal mentioned before, it's already we're looking at a flat revenue of 44.7 million rand for the group, which is also for the net share revenue. As mentioned, a 1.9% increase to the cube of concrete and a margin, operating profit margin decrease from 13.6 to 11.3%. If we listen to the graph at the left again, the cost of sales, an inflation-related increase there of 257 million going to 266. Up 262 was a resulting gross profit decrease from 190 million to 185, just shy of 185 million rand. Operating expenditure increase of 3 million, 3.5 million rand there. That is also includes a portion of the 12 plants that's of course one of the startup phase during the first 6 months of this period. Operating profit therefore 39 as opposed to 47.6 of the previous period. Cement's contribution on the equity accounting line a loss of 5.8 million rand for the period compared to the million rand contribution last year. On an overall side, it was a 3 million rand loss of a profit for cement last year and a 16 million rand loss for the current year, mainly due to volume that was fairly depressed in the first half of the year. We saw February with some rain, and we saw February volumes probably at 70% of the average for the year, because we made a price increase at the beginning of February, and a number of the competitors only followed a month later. So we could see that in the turnover during February, but decided to hold out and wait for the increases from the others to come through. It did pay off, and we saw a pickup again. We had a second item that influenced the first month's results was a little bit more expensive kiln stoppage in May, where there was additional comparatively maintenance costs were higher than the previous year. But as Lanao also said, we've seen post that period good contribution from cement. The last quarter, which has already been reported on by Dangote, saw that 16 million loss turned around to 32 million in profit, something that also continued through to October, and we see good continued results from cement post the first half of the year. Bringing us back to the profit before taxation, 24.5 million as opposed to the 38 million rand of the previous year. Taxation went down correspondingly, and we're reporting then a 14.8 as compared to a 25.2 in the previous year with regard to total comprehensive income. Moving on to slide 11, statement of financial position, very little movement on the asset side. A slight increase in PPE, which would be the final amount for the completion of the 12th plant on the Metier side, the Denver plant. On the equity side, the growth there is purely the reported earnings that we've seen. Current liabilities went down by some 30 million. That is, of course, 17 million of that is the repayment of debt in Netia. 17 million is a portion of that, and the other is an increase or decrease in creditors, where we still continue to utilize the discounts, early payment discounts that's offered by suppliers, and basically resulted in a bit of an investment in working capital on the Netia side during the period under review. Looking at the cash flow, we'll see a movement in cash from 44 to 26 million throughout the period, which in essence is a 17 million reduction of debt. The EBITDA number is just shy of 50 million, and again, bearing in mind that is purely Netia and holdings, as cement is equity accounted for. The investment in net working capital was 27, split about evenly between debtors and creditors. So we've seen all around a little bit of a pressure of the economic circumstances on the debtor side, but funds are still coming in maybe just a week or two later than what was the norm. It's not a matter that the aging is really any concern there, but it is something that we're keeping our eye on. I've already mentioned the payment of debt, the interest portion of that, that is a combined loan of 200 million, or combined debt of 200 million in the Metier books, was 8.8 million for the 6 month period. The small contribution to PPE, as I said, the final spend on Denver plant and the taxation paid, just makes up the full cash flow from all operating and financing activities during the period, closing the period therefore with 26.5 million rand. The post performance, we have alluded to it more than once already, an increase of nearly 10% on a year-to-year comparison. I think most of the year that July was probably our best month
to date with regards to turnover. Results-wise, the EBITDA for July was still a little bit lower than what it was August and September, as July was the last month of the oil crisis, and July was also still subject to the Eskom winter tariff. So we really saw a recovery on EBITDA August, September, and going into October, the last 2 months getting closer to what potential goals is that we were saying that the meat should be operating at. Talked about the, you're allowed to show the graph with the increase of 5% since the beginning of the year, but 2-3% comparative year on year, because we had the downward trend during 2016, of course, that needs to be taken into account when you compare the year on year results. Third quarter revenue increased by 14%, as I said, to 656 compared to the 574 the previous year. And a quarterly EBITDA of 150 million, with an average of 22, as I said, with July still being lower prices and higher electricity tariffs, having an effect on that 22, which saw a good rise September and October. Cumulatively now, for after the 9 months, the reduction in turnover over the first 6 months has been reversed, and volumes are flat for the 9 month period compared, and EBITDA margins for the 3 months, as I have alluded to before, ranging from 21 at the start of the quarter to a 27 at the end of the quarter. Just for completeness sake, I think we have covered this in the post the annual results, but it is something that did happen in the 6 month period. Just the completion of the reshaping of the loan, the 95 million rand payment was made on the 2nd of October, as was required, and that has released the debt covenant pressure. We're comfortable with this situation going forward. We've not had a conclusive discussion with regards to payment by hold of the contribution to the 95 million paid by DCP, but that is a discussion for the future. We do have an option to either pay or dilute, and as we have discussed previously, that dilution would probably reduce the 36 to 34.8 at last subscription or previous subscription prices. Just for confirmation again, the repayment profile will be shaping. 10% of the 1.8 million will be paid in calendar year 2018, in other words, about 180 million, at least on those exact numbers, about 270 million a year after that, that may be three payments totaling 75 million in those 3 years, ranging really between 23 and 27 over that 3 year period. Moving on to slide 16, the outlook. We expect that the conditions to remain challenging, as we've seen over the beginning of this year in the short to medium term, and therefore focus on our side would remain on efficiencies, on maintaining prices, on ensuring that debt covenants are adhered to at all times, which would mean on the Medicare side also keeping a close eye on the working capital that I referred to, making sure that you balance the movement in debtors and creditors to such an extent that there's not too big an investment in working capital. Really a matter of strengthening the balance sheet during this period whilst trading conditions are still tough. That brings us to the end of the presentation, and we can hand you back to the operator to handle any questions.
Thank you very much, sir. Well, ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you'd like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one on your touchtone phone or the keypad on your screen and this will place you in the question queue. If I may decide to withdraw the question, you're welcome to press star and then two on your touchtone phone to remove yourself from the question queue. Just a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one. Thank you. The first question comes from Kwame Andre of UBS.
Good morning, guys, and congratulations on a good set of results in a very difficult market. I think just looking forward, I wanted to find out maybe if you can unpack what drove such a massive recovery in volumes for the third quarter, as was reported by you guys. And, you know, is that just general growth in the market, or you think that you're gaining market share? And if you are, maybe you can give us a sense of who of your competitors you think are losing market share. Thank you.
Yeah, I think I want Peter to handle this in a little bit more detail, but I think it is something that one must say. I think when you looked at the outside of the presentation, you did say that econometrics forecasted a 2.9% decrease in volumes for this quarter, and yet we picked up a 9% increase. That is really due to unavailability of product from competitors. Peter will be able to tell you more about that. I think that is also the one point that I want to pull through from this is the point that we've been putting across, that fundamentals on our side is right, and that it is clearly market conditions that brings about the results that we've been delivering over the last period. The moment that there's a bit of balance in supply and demand and we can deliver into this market, our cost factors of such a nature that we, under these conditions, can obtain the EBITDA margins that we believe we should be operating under. But let's talk to you about who was in the market and why the 10% or 9.6% increase in turnover during this quarter.
Thank you, Neil. Yes, I would agree that a fair portion of that increase is because of the inability of two of our competitors to supply the market because of specifically some problems on the bagging side. I wouldn't like to go into too much detail. I think one of them have reported some numbers themselves, so if you look at the press recently, you'll see that. So that was an opportunistic windfall for us, but obviously we were ready to take advantage of it. The other part was that in last year, we didn't have a particularly good quarter three, so it was a combination of quarter three last year being not as good as the other quarters, and this year a bit more stable. The price increase in August got July volumes to record levels because of the pre-increase stock-up, and then we were lucky that after the increase, some of the competitors couldn't supply the market, so we got some of the effect of the stock-up was diluted. Going forward, we are still going to prefer price to volume, so we are certainly, and you've seen it through the pricing history that we showed in the last year, we will definitely not chase market share or volume if it's there for the taking. We'll take it if there's a gap in the market, but certainly our priority is now to get the top line right.
Thank you. Can I ask one more question? Yes, please. Going forward, I mean, if we look at the economic backdrop, you know, do you think you will, you know, I know that you're chasing your top line rather than necessarily market share, but do you see the market growing at all? And that's the first part. And secondly, maybe can you give us a sense of what your capacity utilization is looking at right now? And the reason why I'm asking that is I'm just trying to get a sense of how much more additional volumes you'll be able to supply the market if there's still a gap.
Peter?
Okay, if I can come back to the second question first. We are operating at the moment under 80% capacity, which is roughly in line with our views of what the overall capacity in the market is. The last quarter, possibly slightly ahead of that, but that's the sort of number I would say we've still got a 20 to 25% that we can go with our existing capacity without spending anything on optimizing capacity. Talking about the market itself, we have said it before and it's continuing that the bag market, and more specifically in the rural areas, are still growing, and that is on the back of government infrastructure spend. Where there is still infrastructure spending, it is on a strategy of developing small contractors and having smaller contracts. So we are still seeing schools, we are still seeing a lot of housing being developed, and that we think will carry on, and if anything, towards the elections, I think we might see some increase in those volumes. The volumes in the formal construction market is under pressure. That has gone down, but if you just look at some of our customers being the brick makers, they are running at full capacity at the moment, and they're supplying the same lower end of the market. So we certainly forecasting a flat market, and then as we get closer to the elections, we could see some upturn in it.
Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, should you wish to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then 1.
Should there be any further questions?
We do have a question just come up now. That is from Alman van Veek of Allen Gray.
Hi, it's actually Gift Boone from Allen Gray.
Hi, Gift. Good morning.
Hi, guys. Good presentation. Some positive Q3 numbers. But here's a question. Did you see a spillover of those volumes that you saw in cement into material? Or was that strictly just in the bagged segment?
Yes, I think again, Peter will be able to answer that question, but I think you're correct in that assumption. We've seen on the Napier side very difficult trading conditions in Gauteng specifically. The case that in activities on the Napier side was improved from last year, whilst the Gauteng results are really going down compared to last year, and it's not that those volumes are going to into next year. It must have been next, but let me confirm that for you.
Sure.
Okay, yeah. It was mainly into the bag market, as I mentioned in the previous answer. Two of our competitors have had bagging line problems more than the rest of the production problems. But what I have also said, and that I must just clarify, on our supply into the brick makers, we've certainly seen an increase in volume into the brick makers larger than what our average 10% is. So if you just compare the bulk supply into the brick making side, there we have seen a substantial increase, larger than the average, from last year to this year, but not into general large construction or into the metier. That's been under slight negative growth.
And do you expect that to at all turn around with the new plant leading into the second half?
I think maybe Jürgen should talk about the metier volumes itself, but if you look at the construction volumes, we are in a lull at the moment. There are, however, a couple of large housing developments and larger construction sites about to be awarded. my own view is we'll see that in the beginning, maybe even from March onwards. So I don't think we'll see anything in the exciting in the immediate future, but I'll pass it on to Jurgen.
Sure. Yeah, Jurgen, so just to try and answer that question, the addition of the 12 plant primarily was for future growth. So there's obviously a longer term plan than possibly just this financial year. Having said that, as Neil and Lau had alluded to in the presentation, the 12 plant has brought some relief in Gauteng with the geographically a little bit more dispersed than the current footprint was. And being a newer plant into a specific area, you do need to work a little bit harder to get traction in the marketplace. We do believe that we've found some traction for the 12th plant in terms of being able to at least pull its own weight. We've analyzed it, and the 12th plant certainly was worthwhile adding in terms of volume contribution. Having said that, I do agree also with Peter's sentiment that large construction or even medium-sized construction, if I think, will be under pressure at least until March next year. As we know, the projects take time getting out of the ground, and there definitely is a lull in the marketplace. So the addition of the 12 plants, if that's to answer the question, has added value, and it has diversified our geographical footprint and saved with some of the pricing pressures as well as volume pressure that is very prominent in Gauteng at the moment.
And competition in that front still remains the same, or is that a sign of both pressure from low demand and also having more players in the market?
Yeah, look, Gauteng, if I can focus just on Gauteng and on all the plants we have there, there's an increase in competition. We've seen a number of independents, even in a difficult economic condition, enter the market for various reasons. And I don't want to speculate, but we take it that some people have decided to create a conduit for their raw materials or hardware or whatever the case will be. Plus, we know that outlying areas in the rest of South Africa has been very sluggish, and so Gauteng is obviously where the volume is perceived to be. So we have more players for lesser volume. Of course, those figures aren't published, so we don't know what the exact volumes are. But from what we can see, we have more players for the same, if not less volume. That's the one area. The other area is that there are vertically integrated players who are aligned with the either cement or aggregate supplier. And those guys obviously might have a slightly different strategy. So the pricing in Gauteng remains under massive pressure. We don't see that relenting in the next few months, not if we look at the market indicators and what people are pricing and willing to do. Having said that, there is also a point we made that at some point in stage, the values that Metier hold close in terms of service quality reliability, at some certain point in time, customers we have had some customers who come back to us because of not pricing but service and what we hold to the market. So there is a bit of a difficult one at the moment. If you're a contractor or developer, you do have the purchasing power, and there are many options to choose from. But we do think that's just that our close to Metier put somewhat our market offering slightly differentiated to a lot of our competitors. But the going is very tough, and it will continue to be so for the next few months for sure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Kev. The next question comes from Nkosi of Momentum.
Good morning, all. I just wanted to confirm your strategy of concentrating on top line. Does that mean you have now secured your intended market share? And now you are in a position to start increasing prices, or it's something else? And also, with this issue of concentrating on top line, what does that mean? Does that mean you are now in a position to start increasing your prices every quarter? What does that mean?
Okay. Yes, I think what we are saying is that we are comfortable with our market share in the current economic climate. I think if you go into a stronger growth phase, then it's a lot easier to grow market share as a strategy and take up more of the growth than your competitors. But if you're in a flat or negative market, case volumes just erode pricing, as we've seen before. So yes, we are comfortable with the volumes that we have achieved. I also think that the new player that came in after us also ramped up their volumes to a fairly stable level. And because of that, we think we can increase prices. Now, the price increase strategy is quite dynamic. We do believe we will see and that would be our strategy to see 2 price increases per annum. A January or February one to look at just recovering cost pressures, because we do have inflationary pressures, and then another one, a second one during the year to catch up the erosion that we've seen in the last 2 years. We've lost some of the recovery of increases or cost increases over the last 2 years, and we'll have to catch that back up. So we see that as a twice a year activity into the future. But what we are also seeing, or as a strategy, what we're also doing is looking at product mix. I think it was quite common knowledge that when we entered the market initially, we had to enter from the bottom, and we came in from the price-sensitive lower strength class prices. Our volumes are now shifting as we're getting more well-known in the market, as our brand is getting acceptance. We are penetrating in some of the, or getting better traction in some of the premium products that have been dominated by the long-standing competitors of ours. So that's the other side. Without increasing volume, increasing the quality of the top line by increasing the volume in the higher strength classes.
Okay, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, just a final reminder, should you wish to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then 1.
Do you have any additional calls present?
There's no further questions on the line. Do you have any closing comments?
Thank you very much, Tony. I'd also like to take the time to thank you all for participating on the call. If you do have any further questions, please don't hesitate to use the contact details at the back of the presentation. And have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Parker Holdings, that concludes this morning's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.